Thank you and God or whatever bless you, faithful listener. If you're listening to this, you have either sponsored the podcast with a sponsorship involving money, involving us getting money, your material podcast hosts, which we like because we like and use money. Money we realize can be exchanged for good services and not as a replacement for happiness, but as a mechanism through which the wheels of happiness can be greased. Or you are a friend of a material podcast supporter and you have basically borrowed their iPhone or their phone or their Android phone or whatever, or someone has posted this to some sort of shadowy website, in which case can we say relay.fm/material and just give us money. It's an ephemeral concept, but money does good things for us. It doesn't do bad things to us. You probably know this voice by now if you've liked the show enough to give us money, but for the possibilities and potential of being formal about this, I am Andy Onatko.
I am Florence Ion.
And I have forgotten my name.
Russell Ivanovich.
Oh, very good, very good. We can do special accent on special show.
Oh,
yes?
My gosh,
yes?
Stop. You're taking me back to the old country.
Okay, nice.
Floor, why don't you eat more? You could have such full. That wonderful. Oh, let me make you some more pierogies.
Hey. Yeah, you can never some be. Of them are, you can never blend. Eat too much.
Yes. So this is bonus episode 2 or 3, whatever. But we're not going to freestyle it, but we have an idea that we wanted to just sort of present to all of you, and we decided to go through our archives and produce the last phones we were using before we switched to smartphones. So we're talking about phones that are basically made of animal skins and twigs held together via
analog bits. Look at Mr. Fancy over here.
Ooh, it's real leather.
Yeah. I had to use like balsa wood. It kept snapping in half or something.
What were they made out of in Australia?
Kangaroos, mate. You'd hit a kangaroo with your car, you'd totally total your ute, and then you'd throw the kangaroo in the back and you'd make 3 phones out of it. That's accurate.
That's accurate?
Totally culturally accurate. I am Australian, can confirm.
I can. You can't see in the video, but he's actually holding up one of those like enormous 68-ounce cans of beer. And he's got one of those safari hats with the corks dangling off of them.
Well, here, Andy, we just call that 1 pint. You can swim
I thought
in
you guys
it.
Just
you
call it Foster's.
Oh, Flo, that hurts. That hurts.
I'm sorry.
Wait, I have a question
for
you.
Well, don't advertise so much over here then. Jeez.
That's because we can't sell that beer in Australia. We have to sell it somewhere. I have to say, so here in Australia, the big American beer is Sierra Nevada. Do you actually drink that in America?
Yeah. Is that,
you do. That's weird because we don't drink the Foster's. I guess you guys are more upstanding than we are. We're like, this
like,
is disgusting.
Like, is that Budweiser? Or like a Miller Lite, or maybe even just kind of like really bring you into the Americanism of Natty Ice.
The what? Natty Ice. Did you say Natty Ice? Notice. What is a Natty Ice? We've heard of Bud Light here. The problem with Bud Light here is it's like 0.5% or something. And for some reason, Australians just look at that. They're like, you can't be serious. Like I can buy like a soda if I want. Like I don't need to.
That's not going to dull the pain when you're having a leg sawn off. Because that's the only way to get the eel removed from your body is to have them keep the foot and go toss it back.
Oh
in the
my
water.
Gosh! Rest in peace, Steve Irwin. Rest in peace.
Yes. I went to this is a special show, so I can talk about special things. I went to the Steve Irwin National Park. That's not the technical name for it. I've forgotten what it is. But it is freaky how much that man's face is all over the park and in every single video that you watch. And this is a point where he's already passed on, you know, thanks to the stingray, which was his friend. But it's just it's very amazing and creepy all at the same time to see him like all over this place. So if you're ever in Australia, visit. I can't remember what it's called. It's the place that Steve Irwin founded. And it's somewhere near Port Douglas/Cairns up in the north of Queensland.
So how now we have a different idea of we have no idea what the local hero is like. The animal channels that were doing his documentaries presented a certain image of him to us Americans. Like what is thought of Steve Irwin in Australia, in his native land?
Oh, in all honesty, he was beloved down here as well. I know he was big in America apparently as well. And there are occasions where you've got Crocodile Dundee,
and big
right?
in Japan.
Exactly, big in Japan. Crocodile Dundee was kind of the opposite example. He was huge in America and we were like, what the heck? What is up with this movie? Like, that's not a knife, this is a knife. That was a cool line. I'll give him that. But later on, the guy that played Crocodile Dundee just, you know, he was not beloved by Australia. But Steve Irwin was the complete opposite. Everybody just loved him. He was infectious and he loved animals. And who doesn't love animals? Even though they try and kill us here in Australia, we still love them all the same.
There's people who don't love animals and they're evil.
Yes.
They're evil.
I can get on board with that message, Flo. If you,
sorry.
Yeah, it's just, if you want to make some campaign slogans and
if you don't like them, just don't hurt them. All right? Just leave them alone. Okay? That's all I'm going
to
say about that.
The show went to a dark place really quickly. That's why it's special.
Hey, it's a special show.
There you go.
Okay, sorry, I'm a little more preachy. I wanted to hear about your last cell phone because that's what they were called.
Hmm. And well, here they were mobile phones. Let's not get the cultural thing technical, but we don't use the word cell here. I'm just going to keep bringing that up. It's the American versus Australian show. I'm going to turn it into that, even if it's not. Sorry, Andy. Tell us about your mobile phone.
I don't see. Maybe if Russell wants to like screen cap this for, see, I have like drawers of stuff inside that are sort of organized. This is a drawer that is labeled phones, comma old.
It's literally labeled phones. The brackets old. I'll describe this for the listener, Andy. I will have a picture in the show notes. It's literally a drawer, a really long, thin drawer.
Like an old-fashioned library catalog card.
Yeah, it looks like it's part of the Dewey Decimal System. It's probably 891.7 or something in Andy's house. And it's just full of old phones. Phones, brackets, old.
With antennas that you can, it looks like they're retractable.
Did some of those
That is exactly like the end limit of my experience. This, because this is actually like my very first phone, just for reference. It does have an external antenna, but it's like hard rubber and it's molded in. I had to remove the battery to get the model number off of this. This is an Ericsson. We've been pasting into the Slack like the wiki pages.
It's Ericsson
for each of our phones.
Ericsson Sony, correct?
The Ericsson R289LX, it's got an LCD. It's got the rubberized keypad. It was probably a big deal because you could actually put it inside your pocket. I couldn't afford a flip phone. It's your basic contract phone. And I think I remember the first time. I'm not sure if Google was around. If Google was around back then, you could definitely do like a text based Google search. I've got the page for this at phonearena.com. Display resolution is 101 by 40 pixels, a user replaceable nickel metal hydride battery with 2.4 hours of talk time, supporting both the 800 and 1900 megahertz bands. It got FCC approval in August of 2000, so yes, it's not exactly rated fresh. And I will say that it does see, even this one had a headphone jack. Okay, let's not stop throwing shade, but the thing is, it's, you have to look at the very, very base. It uses this really weird like copper connector.
Ericsson was big on those. They're big wired connector with the two clips on it.
And so you did have to, so it does have a headphone jack, but you needed a dongle in order to make it work. And I'm kind of refreshing my memory here because I don't think it had a music player. I think that was literally if you just wanted to be a cool, pretend you were a cool executive who had a wired headset on your mobile phone. But I don't sure if that would actually work. The actual last phone I used that was not technically a smartphone is actually this one, which is another Ericsson, but that's when it was after Sony bought them out. This is, see, if I were more organized, I would have had these pages lit up for me already. Click, 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 click. There you go. The Sony Ericsson T610.
Oh, I was so jealous of the people who had that phone.
Yeah.
Because it was beautiful. It had a color screen. I don't think I had a color screen by then.
It had some kind of charger sticky tape to the back of it. What's going on there, Andy?
Yeah, exactly. So we're talking about 128 by 160 pixels, but a color screen, which was kind of a big deal back then. It was also my very first camera phone with a resolution of 288 by 352 pixels.
I didn't have a camera, and those other kids did. I'm just saying.
Yeah. And I I can't explain to you the first time that I took a picture with my phone, and then I think I actually had to like use the built-in like thin email client to email it to Flickr, and it magically appeared on the web. It was like, oh my God, men and women from Mars have landed, and I'm willing to give up free will if they're willing to give us stuff like this. This was a big deal purchase for me because I wasn't even very, very pleased with the idea of having cell phones. I remember that I bought it because at the time, Apple had just come out with iSync, which was the app for like syncing data between the Mac and PDAs. And this was like the one they demonstrated with to say, and also we're supporting this thing called Bluetooth. If you have a phone that supports Bluetooth, you can wirelessly use iSync to connect things to it. And so I think they only supported like two phones to begin with. And I think that might've been the first time I really used the, I don't really need a new phone, but I think that I should know about how this brand new technology works. And the fact that it has a color screen and a camera means nothing. So as Russell pointed out, it does have like a charger duct tape to it because I couldn't find the charger for it. And I was so excited by the idea of lighting this back up again and seeing what pictures might still be on this thing. But yeah, I guess the battery was not meant to live 14, wasn't meant to live 17 years, or whatever. It was introduced in 2003. I probably would have bought it in like 2004, I guess. So this is 13 years old, I guess. And which is actually, I've got a TRS-80, like, you know, little laptop here that's way older than that, and it still lights up when you put battery. Oh, well. But, yeah, it's weird. It's weird how sense memory works. Like, this is the first time in years I've actually held this thing in my hand, and it's, like, it's 2004 all over again. It's like an unsteady nation is at war that it doesn't even understand, trying to figure out if its president and his staff has lied to the American people about the purpose of invading another country. It was a very, very sensitive time.
Not to date myself here, but I was graduating high school when that phone was really
taken off. Are you serious right now?
Yes.
Wow. I was graduating university, so I've just realized there's a big age gap between us.
I'm young. We've established that everywhere. It's fine.
I'm old. That's what we've established, damn it.
But I remember, like, I had friends who worked at this restaurant we have called in the States. I actually don't know if they have it in the East Coast, Andy, Texas Roadhouse, which is like a giant chain. Yeah. It's like an Applebee's type place where they like give you a giant bucket of peanuts for every table. And like you could just throw the peanut shells on the ground. And that's like part of the ambiance because yeehaw, right? Anyway, they worked there, and for some reason, like, a lot of people worked there. There was just this network of where they just kept getting their friends hired, and so eventually that was, like, the place to work with your friends. But I remember my friend counting, she would count her tips, like, right before history class would start for some strange reason, she did it there, and I remember she told me she was saving to buy, like, that phone, to which I was just like, that's interesting. I didn't know anybody cared about that stuff. But I mean, back then, like, you could buy your own phone as a teenager outright with tips that you made hostessing. Like, it was not a huge, the carrier was subsidizing so much back then. I was getting these phones for like $80.
Yep.
Yeah.
Like, that's how much it would cost to upgrade. And so because of that, I would upgrade my phone every year. At Verizon, because it was like actually kind of affordable.
I'd be interesting actually to know from you two, like, do you remember the year that you actually got your first mobile phone? Because for me, it was 1997, and it was the GA628, which is another Ericsson phone, very similar to the one that Andy had, just the GSM version, I think, and slightly older, had 2 pixels of display. And I'll never forget the feeling of like, oh, this is weird. Like, I can call people from anywhere now. And they weren't super common. Like, people started to be having mobile phones, but it wasn't like every single person had one. It was maybe 1 in 10 people had a mobile phone, like, at that stage. And it was still kind of novel. And then I discovered text messaging. I'm like, I can send someone words via some weird, like, phone network. And it cost me only 25 cents per every message. Different times.
I will say our first cell phone in the family was just around 97. this is just like kind of, I guess this is like a parable or whatever, I don't know. But my mother had totaled her car. She like rolled it over on one of our bridges here. And the thing that basically got her help was somebody had a cell phone in their glove compartment, because back then you would have a phone for emergencies, and they were really advertising. I remember on TV, like I would see advertisements for like, get a phone, accidents happen, keep a phone. You can buy this like phone where the plan is just for in case of emergencies. So you never use the phone. You just keep it charged in your glove compartment just in case anything happened. And so after that, we ended up getting like a family cell phone. And so just kind of like rotate between whoever's car it was that mattered. Or that people were, not that mattered.
Only the family members we cared about got to carry the single phone. If two of them were going out at the same time, we had to decide which one of the Flo family members do we care about more.
All cars. I did have an annoying aunt. All cars. yeah, but we didn't have like traditional open and flip and talk, and that's okay. It's only 10 cents a minute phones until like around 99. And that's when my parents started using them for their businesses. Like my dad left the tech industry. Now I'm like, we're going into my family history. But he became a contractor. And so a lot of contractors back then, cool new things, a cell phone. You can do estimates on the go.
Yeah. I mean, there are some parallels there with the iPhone and the Android launches later on. How quickly like mobile phones took off worldwide, not just in America, not just in Australia, like in tons of places. Like all of a sudden the infrastructure sprung up. It was there. And then felt like 2 years later, everybody had one. You're like, what just happened?
I kind of want to. I'll get back to this later. Go ahead, Andy. Sorry.
No. That was my first real experience. I wanted to kind of mention the first really. Can you call it a smartphone if it was a flip phone? Because HTC had a phone they called the Star Trek. It ran the Windows Phone, or I think the. Did they call it Windows Phone or Windows Mobile back then?
That's Windows Mobile, right?
Yeah, Windows Mobile. Yeah,
up until 6.
They flipped. Yeah, it was not really anything to do with Windows. They decided to just use it as like brand extension marketing. And it was, they were literally marketing it as like, it's like a Star Trek communicator. Because it was the most, I know that I've got it in the office somewhere. I think that I actually had bagged up with all of its accessories so it didn't make it into the drawer or something. But it was just a beautiful, it was kind of built along the lines of the Motorola Razr, but it was like narrower, again, with the proportions of, so it was a thin and flat, but metal with metal keys on it, a color display, a really nice like D-pad style user interface. So obviously it wasn't touchscreen, but up, down, left, right, so and action. So you could basically drill down into menus. I remember like using a precursor to Google Reader or something like that on this device, where it was just very, very easy to go from list view to actual articles. The phone was like a whopping now 320 by 240 or something. But it also has the one feature that I think that if we could find a way of replicating this into the modern touchscreen world, there's something so satisfying about when you end a call just simply closing your hand and go flap, snap, and just snaps closed, and you've ended the call and you've ended the operation, you're moving on with your day. It was just something so very, very satisfying about that. It was also called, now I found it, it's on Pocket now, the Q-Tech 8500, but also known, made by HTC and codenamed the Star Trek phone. There was another detail about this that I kind of have to mention. Windows Mobile 5 screen is 320 by 640K with 64,000 colors, a 1.3 megapixel camera. So it was pretty good for its day. I bought this phone at a Microsoft developer conference because, again, they were trying to get people to develop for this phone. And this is 2005. This is like a year before the iPhone is going to be announced. But we all know that at this point, there's no details about what the iPhone is going to be. There's no confirmation, obviously. But I am plugged in enough to know that Apple is definitely now moving forward on their iPod phone project. Definitely going to happen. Almost certainly not this year, but almost certainly next year. At that point, I was also plugged in enough to be very sure that it's going to be an AT&T phone. This is back when they don't make phones for every platform. Right. And so, but I buy the, so I get this phone because it's really, really cool. It's about, and it's about a year off and I got a good deal on it. And try to swap my SIM card from the old Sony Ericsson into this. And I get, it works as a phone, but I don't get any of the digital features. And I go work all the way up and down the phone tree with tech support with AT&T to try to figure out why it wasn't working. Finally, we get to an actual engineer who figures out that I've got, because I'm such an old subscriber, my SIM card doesn't have enough memory. It needs a modern and the newer version of the SIM card they introduced a year or two ago that has more memory on it. So, oh, great. So just transfer me back. Right. Just so, okay. So I figured I'm going to spend 50.
Just a quick aside for our listeners who might be younger and don't remember this, Andy, but do you remember all your contacts actually used to live on the SIM card itself? Some of your text messages were saved on the SIM card. That was like the early storage for like phones, and so you'd swap SIM cards and all your stuff would be gone,
and you could back up stuff off of the phone onto the SIM card. Right. So
I didn't have SIM cards, just FYI, because I had Verizon. I've had Verizon my entire entire phone life. I've never had anything else,
because all of Australia's GSM, so we were SIM cards for like every carrier.
Yeah, no, CDMA life over here.
And you used to have to worry about like, oh, my phone can store 40 contacts, my SIM card can store 20 contacts, and you used to have a little symbol next to your contacts for like where that was, and you used to have to juggle the two. You're like, oh, I filled up my SIM card, now I have to store stuff on my phone. It's really weird.
Who is on my list right now of people that I would like to remove from my contacts list?
Sorry, Andy. You were telling a story. I interrupted.
Oh, so okay. So now it's like I figured that I'm going to spend. Okay, they're going to charge me $15 to give me a 30 cent piece of plastic, and so I got on customer service and said, okay, and so that'd be it was like a $20 charge. Okay, fine, whatever. And we will be putting on a 1-year contract. And I'm like, excuse me. It's like, oh, there's a you'll be extending your contract by a year. I said, okay, well, actually, I'm not on a contract, so that doesn't apply, I guess. So, no, we will be putting you now on a 1-year like service contract. And I'm like, I don't want to be on a 1-year contract. It's like, you're just, I like the idea that I am, you know, I'm not after, you know, after 2 years of whatever, I'm now not under contract. I've not been under contract with AT&T for a year, and I don't want to be locked into a contract anymore. But more than anything else, it's really getting like getting my anger up, because it's like, there is no technical reason for you to put me under a year-long contract just to give me a new SIM card. There is no technical reason for that to happen. You're just trying to goose me, saying that he's probably not going to cancel his service with AT&T over a 1-year contract, and that way I get whatever commission or whatever spiff or whatever. Or maybe it's just that there's a rule in the computer that says that anytime you give a new SIM, that's how we're going to screw over people. And it was like several phone calls over several days that finally ended with me actually saying, now look, I was an AT&T customer, and then you changed your name to Singular, and then you change it back to AT&T. That's how long I've been a customer.
There he goes. Paying
every single. I had to say, you are really willing to risk that I can't tell you how disturbed I am that. I actually said this out loud. I said that, you know, that you don't have to put me under a contract. Your company just wants to stick it to me because they see an opportunity. That means that I don't want to do business with you anymore. Are you really willing, and tell this to a supervisor if you want to, you're really willing to lose me as a customer over this? And so I'm sorry, sir, we can't do that. And so I hung up the phone, and I was so ready to say, okay, screw you, I'm going to cancel. And then again, I don't know if this happens with you, but like in a conceptual way, sometimes like my personality has to sort of partition itself and say, okay, Andy, we could do that. We could cancel with AT&T and switch to Verizon or something. That would not be a problem. We can do that. But you know that, and it would make us very happy for a couple of days that we had done that and they couldn't, quote, control us anymore, end quote. But you realize that when we sign up for the Verizon would put us under a 2-year contract. So we would still be under a contract. So no net gain there. AT&T wouldn't care whatsoever. Also, you're now 95% sure that if you want an iPhone next year, and we do want an iPhone, we will have to switch back to AT&T anyway to get that phone. Now, are you willing to trade all the annoyance of being under Verizon for about 10 or 11 months, switching back to AT&T, all of that stuff? Or can you just simply say, fine, put me under a year-long contract because, Andy, you were going to be paying these bills every month anyway, and you did plan on being. So I had to really talk myself down and just say, fine, put me under a year-long contract, charge my bill $20 damn sim. So yeah, I did not switch. I said I had to talk, if I had to really work my way through that, say that you were planning on being with AT&T for the next year anyway. You are just you are just annoyed and you don't know what to do with being annoyed. What you should do is you should go to the flea market, find some stall that's selling like really, really bad old like plates from the 1980s and buy a box of those and then go down into the old quarry and just fling all 20 of those play settings and listen to them sail through the air, then smash against the wall and pretend that each one of those is a piece of your annoyance that you're dealing with, and then simply call and get that new SIM from AT&T.
Wow. We have really
brought
back some
feelings.
Andy.
Yeah. It's very Greek of you.
Oh, yes. Still haven't forgiven them. And now, see, I didn't realize, though, that I'd have an opportunity, like 11 years later, to call out AT&T for being a bunch of wretched scum and villainry.
Which, but I will continue. As far as I'm aware, you're the first American ever to do. Like, I've never had any other complaints about such a fine mobile phone carrier that is welcome to sponsor us if they want. Hi, people. But
well, because the industry is so well regulated over here that usually that those sorts of anti-consumer shenanigans are not tolerated with cell phone companies.
That's what I hear. Everyone loves their cell phone companies because they're so amazing. But Flo, I really want to hear about the first phone you had, the last phone you had, sorry, pre-smartphone.
Well, so full disclosure, this is the second to last phone that I had because what happened is I had some bills to pay in college. It's called rent. And I had a lot of old phones because I told you I used to upgrade them like crazy. So when Gazelle was first announced, I just sold everything. But I didn't sell this phone for some reason. I think it's because I left it at my old bedroom at my parents' house and it just kind of stayed there. Anyway, I tried to revive it. I have three batteries here. None of them have worked. I think all of them are dead. It's like plugged in and everything. And I'm just so bummed because I really wanted to walk you through some of the software features. So the phone that the second to last phone that I had, which was made available in late 2006, was the LG Envy, the first.
Ooh.
Do you remember that one, Andy? It was like, I could just show you. It's right here in front of me. So I'm gonna relay this to my co-host through Skype, but I will try to do my best to explain it. So basically, it looks at from the front, it looks like a cute little candy bar phone, which came in three different colors. It came in green, silver, and orange. And this is the orange one that I got because I wanted to be special or whatever. I wanted to stand out from the crowd. When you flip it open, there's a full QWERTY keyboard there and another display on the inside, as well as like speakers, which I guess are supposed to be stereo speakers, but compared to like what I've heard on Boom Sound on an HTC phone, not even there. but it's good to know LG has had this like long line of let's beef up our phones with good speakers, because clearly that was kind of, maybe that's where it started. There's a lot of like little shortcut buttons, which were the really popular thing to do on phones in the mid-aughts. Do you guys remember? There'd always be like, here's a shortcut button. Oh, for the camera, for instance, just for the camera to launch it. And I used it, by the way, I used it so much that when I press down on the button, it feels like really loose. It was just kind of very well loved. There was also a flip open door thingamajig on the back of the 2-megapixel camera, which by the way had flash, thank you very much. And it just kind of opens and closes the lens so that you could protect it in your purse. And there was a headphone jack, but it's not the traditional 3.5 millimeter. Do you guys remember this one? It was kind of like a smaller, like you could buy an adapter for it.
It was like a
2.5 or something.
Yeah.
Yes, 2.5. Yeah. So I went and I bought the adapter at Radio Shack, and I remember trying to listen to music because there's a micro SD slot on this thing, like a tiny little micro SD slot. And I put some music on it, but it was like mono speaker. So it sounded terrible. And I think it was just because I was using the adapter. I wasn't using the Verizon approved headphones that you were supposed to buy as an accessory out on when you bought this phone, which by the way, I think I also got this phone for like $80 because that was subsidization back then. This phone carried me through a lot. It had Bluetooth, it had my pictures. And Andy, as you were talking earlier about how you were posting to Flickr, I used to do the same thing where you would email or you would text message the photo to Flickr, or yeah, you would text message it to Flickr and you would set up that. And then I set it up in some manner. I forgot what it was that I set up, but I made it so that all of the photos that I posted to Flickr also posted as to, oh no, no, no. It's post to your live journal. So I would post to my live journal and then that would also get posted to the Flickr simultaneously.
That's live journal. Wow.
Yes.
Your social media game was on point.
That's even where I met my husband. I met my husband on live journal.
Didn't we?
So
all?
That's like, that's how deep into the internet I was. But yeah, I had like all these little actions set up to deal with this phone. And I mean, I'm going to toot my own horn and say that because I knew about that whole upgrade game, I also had a pretty good phone in class, which may or may not have been a good thing because I had a lot of distractions. So this phone alone, I went through it before, like I managed to resuscitate it for a couple of weeks. And then I guess the battery, like I left it on and I guess that sucked out all the juice that was left from this eBay bought battery. And the software is, of course, proprietary. It's not Android or anything beautiful that we see now. It's just this non-touchscreen interface where you have to like hit certain navigation buttons to like go through menus. And you would get apps through the Verizon App Store, the VCast apps. And there is like, it's emblazoned across the box that it came in, and you would get charged for these apps with your monthly bill. And I was kind of a little brat and I would buy games on my family plan and just pray that my father wouldn't find out that I had spent $5 on a completely useless mobile version of Tetris. Like, just so that I could maybe not be bored, because I just really wanted a game, because games were no longer a part of phones during this time. There was no included Snake by default. There was nothing to distract you. And lastly, I also had mobile internet, by the way, and I've had mobile internet since at least 2002.
Wow.
Because I used to surf. Yahoo is a search engine that I used, because back then I didn't really know about Google. That didn't really happen until like later in high school. Sorry, now that we like dated me. I would post a live journal through like a text only browser interface.
Yeah, you're just looking at that form factor. I remember that being a really, really cool sort of form factor, but also that I remember like how excited every single mobile carrier was about mobile gaming and how they were designing all these phones that when you flipped it out and you talked about the speakers, I was thinking about more of it as like all the different briefings I had about how, oh, well, this is the first phone that Verizon has offered that's going to be intended for as a mobile gaming platform, like as a you know, digital Game Boy. Because again, they're very, very aware that if you could get the kids on the family plan to buy games, and there's no fingerprint authorization. There is no, by the way, here's a 4-digit code that your parents have to tap in order to charge things. They were really, really happy about this idea about
you just buy it, and unless dad reads the bill, he'll never find out, because they're going to charge you for stuff anyway. You didn't think I feel like the American way is to just be okay with being beat up by your carriers. And we learned that in the 2000s. They trained us in the 2000s to just, hey, that extra $10 is probably because my daughter was yapping away on the phone with her boyfriend too long, which was usually the case with me because whatever, I'm a millennial. We've grown to accept it, I guess.
Why would you? Of course, you could go somewhere and simply buy a compact disc or a cassette tape. But this game, you push this button, my dear, and you will have it now. Why should you wait for things that you want when you want them now? We can give them to you now if you want them now.
And this was pre backlit gaming, okay? Because we didn't have backlit handheld gaming until whenever the heck the 3DS came out, or the DS, I guess. Or I guess the Game Boy Advance. Anyway, I didn't have backlit gaming for a while. So this is what I had. Okay. I could fall asleep.
Such sweet memories. All right, I have to tell you too about the last phone I had pre the smartphone. My first smartphone was the iPhone, but that's a story for another day. This was I've just hit the microphone. This was
I thought that was a dramatic.
Yeah, this is my dramatic entrance. Ready? Dun, 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 dun. So it was the Sony Ericsson K750, and I believe mine had an I on the end. I don't remember what the I stood for.
K750.
Sony Ericsson.
I'm gonna go. Keep talking. Sorry.
That's all right. I'm gonna tell you about all the specs. I'm gonna do a little mini review just for you two. The thing is, this is the first phone I ever bought outright as well. So before that, it was always like free on a contract, free quote unquote on a 1 year contract, and then they became 2 year contracts because carriers realized that they could get us for even more. I actually paid for this with my own dollars. So this happened to me, like I wanted to buy it outright. I was looking at all the different places that sold it, and Vodafone at the time had it for $100 less than everybody else. And I'm like, I don't understand why, but I'm doing this. Let's buy this from Vodafone. And this is the first time I experienced carrier branding as well, because I got it home, I pulled it out of the box, and there's giant Vodafone logos all over it. I'm like, what? There's like a red Vodafone sticker here. There's a Vodafone background. There's a Vodafone freaking OS running on the thing. And this is the first ever phone I guess I technically jailbroke, although we didn't call it that back then. I downloaded a Brown firmware. That was the generic firmware that you could get from the internet. I know that sounds weird in the modern age. It sounds weird, Brown. I get it. Haha, funny. But you could actually download the firmware and flash it onto the phone, and then you had the quote-unquote stock experience. If any of this sounds familiar, it's because I guess phones were starting to go down the same paths like they have since then. But let me tell you some of the specs on this puppy. So it came with a mini SIM. So your SIM wasn't a full credit card size. It was smaller. It had 256,000 colors on the display, so it was a color display.
Cool.
It was 176 by 220 pixels. That's 157 pixels per inch. That was pretty high density. And let me tell you, you could actually set, I remember this clearly, you could set wallpaper backgrounds on your phone, which for me, having come from a black and white phone before, this was a new thing. You could actually browse for pictures, and you could put them on as your background. And I spent many, many, many hours looking for pictures to add as my background. It was just so cool. Like I know it sounds like cheesy now, but it was like, back then it was cool. You could store 30 of your last phone calls that people had stored, not the audio of them, just the fact that they'd called you. 38 megabytes of internal storage. I remember loading one or two MP3s on there. That was good stuff. And the back of this phone was really cool. So imagine Sony Ericsson was going kind of for like a flip phone camera side kind of vibe. And so you'd actually pull open the lens on the back of the phone to start the camera. And it was a physical shutter that you'd actually, I'll send you some pictures of this.
I remember those commercial or something similar to that.
And then you take yourself a 2-megapixel photo. And back then it was like, phones can take these kind of photos? Like, isn't this amazing? You can actually make out what's in the photo. It's not just like a smudgy, blurry blob of like, oh yeah, I think that's my friend Kevin and someone else. This was like, oh, no, you can actually see that's Kevin. You can almost see that Kevin's wearing glasses. It's amazing. It was 2 megapixels of magnificence. And my favorite part by far, and this is a huge throwback, is 16 days of battery life. We're talking like 16 days of standby. So let's say you went somewhere for like a week or whatever. You didn't take your charger with you because you're like, yeah, my phone's good for a week. No problems. Like 14 days was maybe pushing it if you're going to make a lot of phone calls or change your wallpaper background a lot like I did, because obviously you light up the screen. But to just leave it on and ready to receive phone calls and text messages, 16 days on its, I'm just going to scroll up here, 900 milliamp hour lithium polymer battery. It was like, whoa, how did they do it? I don't know. Such a cool phone, and I still have memories, such fond memories of this phone.
I got this features list. Does that have a stereo FM radio?
Yeah, there was a dedicated button which would launch. Do you remember WAP? WAP 2.0, not WAP 1.0. Yeah. It was like web quote browsers. Unquote the mobile internet. It was actually really annoying. That's one of the other carrier features, is they've put a physical button on this phone to launch the WAP browser, and you'd hit it all the time. They put it in just the right spot that whenever you're trying to do anything else, you were hitting this WAP button, and you would actually get charged slightly just for opening the browser because you downloaded that first few kilobytes of data, and they're like,
oh my gosh,
sweet.
Yes. I remember that counted toward that. I have to say, the Sonys, so I think it was after your phone, I apologize that I was trying to go down a rabbit hole to find this phone, to find the exact model. But
I'm going
to
guess this was the W800.
Oh, maybe. Was that the 5-megapixel camera?
That was the fancy one that everyone had.
Okay. So my best friend had that Sony Ericsson, I believe. I think it came out like around. Yes, that was it. that was exactly it. W800. Although 2 megapixel, I thought it was 5 megapixel. Anyway, she had an Ericsson that was 5 megapixel, and that carried her through Europe until like 2012, 2013. Wow. Yeah, she didn't upgrade it for a long time, and she actually ended up buying it again on eBay after her first one died because she loved it so much. The interface and the fact that, like, when you think about it, at the time when it came out, nobody was doing 5 megapixels on phones, and that was kind of what you'd have to buy a digital camera for to get that kind of resolution.
Yep.
An extra $350 on a Nikon or a Canon.
My very first digital camera was a Canon G3, I think it was, and these were like 4 megapixels, and 4 megapixels was a lot, because I had friends who went through Europe and they had one of the first sort of digital cameras, and they came back and their photo colors were just like, it was shockingly horrendous, like pinks and blues where there shouldn't have been pinks and blues. And you don't want to be that person that's like, your photos look terrible. It's like, no, oh, that's an amazing photo of, I want to say the Eiffel Tower. I can't really tell because your photo's terrible. But they were really proud of the fact that, you know, you could snap, you could download them all to your computer, and you're like, look, I have them on my laptop. And I remember that one of the Canon cameras that came out, I think it was the G3, and it was 4 megapixel camera, actual good lens. And they were expensive back then. And you're like, oh, no one's ever going to want photos bigger than 4 megapixels. These are huge. I don't know how I'm going to store all these on my hard drive. They're just so big.
Yeah, some of my favorite pictures, though, are like early camera phone pictures, because almost all of them are of like friends and acquaintances. One of my favorite pictures is I'll see if I can put it in the show notes for people who want to check it out later. But it's posted directly to Flickr. It's a picture of like 3 friends of mine who are like older gentlemen at a conference, because I was explaining like what photo blogging was. Well, see, there's a camera built into the phone. So if I just take your picture like this, click, click, and then all I have to do is text it or email it to this special email address, and now it's been posted to the internet. Now people can see it, and I can have a comment underneath it. And so I've got like a bunch of pictures like that on my Flickr that's just like me demonstrating photo blogging to people. Just like years later, my Google Glass has contributed so many pictures of just people taking my picture because they wanted to try the Google Glass, and the first thing they wanted to do is say, okay, Guillermo, take a photo, and of course I'm standing in front of them.
That's really sweet, though. I love that, like, you know, when I look through my Flickr profile, which I mean, that's a whole nother conversation that maybe we need to have someday, about just the fact that there's a lot of my past life, because I am a millennial, there's a lot of my life now on the internet that I kind of need to like take down. And so, but at the same time, like, I'm really happy to have that digital information, because those are digital memories. It's the same as my mom, like, pulling out the photo albums that she used to put together when we were younger, and just kind of like going through them sometimes. That's digital photography for me. I just have everything in bytes instead of physical form.
Yeah, absolutely. So going through all these slides that my dad took, you know, when we were closing down their house. And of course, they're the ones that are, oh, here is somebody's wedding and here's somebody's birthday party. And of course, those are the ones that you sort of expect. But the ones that I love most of all are clearly the ones where there are 24 shots on a roll. He took like, it took him 2 months to take shot number 21, and now he's sick of waiting, and now he just decided to just blow off the last 3 frames by just inside his office just inside the living room, just click, click, click. And these are just completely, they're not even pictures of anybody. This is what the state of the Anatko family living room was on this day in 1983 or 1982. Not even, again, but it's like, oh my God, there's a newspaper. Like, oh my God, there's some cup of coffee. It's like, you know, things that my mom probably would have tidied up if they were they're taking pictures in here right now. And it's just fascinating, because this is, again, a freeze frame of what a video inside that house would have been like at that moment. And so I will say that having been, I'm at that horrible, horrible in between age where maybe it was the last great age, where I was the last snotty, horrible 16 to 19 year old on the internet, of whom there was absolutely no trace of anything he said, because it was well before anything was being archived or kept anywhere. Because I'm particularly thinking about a couple of really, really horrible things I posted in a message forum that are like, oh, 17-year-old Andy, you were such a dumbass.
We were so misguided back then.
Yeah.
But we thought we were so smart. We're like, I know everything.
I know. We thought, like, I totally get it. And then, like, 7 years later, I'm a completely different person.
Yeah. And so I don't know. It's such a catch 22 that you younger people are sort of trapped in, where I would love to also have had have a digital camera where I'm just taking pictures at random because it doesn't cost me anything. So I would have pictures, anything that I'm interested in from 20 years later, there's probably an image of it somewhere, versus no, there is a breadcrumb trail of every stupid idle thought you had. Even, you know, I'll even go this far that when you're 17 years old, you think you have a sense of humor, and you think, how about the National Association for the Advancement of White People? Wouldn't that be interesting? And you're not saying that in a racist way. You're not saying that in the white people haven't been. It's like, hey, wouldn't it be funny if there were this? And of course, realizing that, okay, again, I know that you're just joking there, but here's why that's an awful, A, not funny, B, a terrible joke, and C, if there were an internet right now, people would just read that and think, oh my God, what a horrible person. Let's make sure this person gets fired from whatever job they have.
It's way better than the I hate Avril Lavigne live journal page I was really a part of. And I apologize to Avril Lavigne. I don't hate you. I was very misguided back then. I thought I was super punk and that you were not. Yeah.
Yep. stuff like that too, where I have to make sure that I don't know what I stand for or what I believe in or what I like. I choose to define myself by really, really hating this band that my sister likes. And I need to make sure that people won't understand how much I don't like them unless I say they should die in a fire. I could watch them burning to death on stage and feel nothing. No, I never wrote that. But that's the sort of stuff you write when you're 16 or 17. You realize that.
No, it really is. Which is why bullying is terrible.
Yes.
PSA.
We can all get behind that message. Bullying is terrible.
Sorry, I took that on a dark turn, but I just, anyway, go ahead, Russell.
I find this weird because I'm kind of like in between you two, I guess, generation wise, mm-hmm. like older than Flo, younger than Andy. And I got to, at age like 21, just choose a new username. I'm like, I'm now going to be Rusty Shelf, I think is when that came about. And everything that happened before that just disappeared because no one can connect, like, you know, pre-Rusty Shelf Russell with what happens now. But the problem is now, like, at age, my kids are like 10 and 8 and they're already having to, like, think of, like, you know, one, usernames that aren't taken, but two, they think about it as a thing they pick now and they're going to have to hold on to for the rest of their life. So I'm thinking whatever username you pick now at age like 10 or 13 or whenever you're allowed to join some of these services, that's going to stick with you for life. Like, it's amazing. Like, I had tons of friends that had Hotmail accounts, and when that wasn't cool anymore, you just dumped your Hotmail accounts. You're like, don't need that anymore.
I still have my Hotmail account. Thank you very much. It's my junk mail account forever and ever.
Do you still have a Yahoo account, though?
I don't, because it got hacked so many times that I just said, bye-bye, Yahoo, and switched over to my Google account to be the login for Flickr. But I just have to say that Hotmail account, and I don't even care. I'll put this out in the world. P. Roach X rocks.
What? P. Roach X
rocks. Papa Roach rocks. Just want you all to know where I'm coming from.
All right. I might be old here, but who or what is a Papa Roach?
Oh, don't worry about it. It's new metal. They're from Vacaville, so technically it's kind of regional for me because that's like whatever outside of Sacramento. But anyway, yeah, I had terrible screen names, but I did have like three. I've had three main screen names in my life, which I will not say. The last one is the one that everybody knows me from, which is Oh That Flow, which I adopted when I started my internship at Maximum PC. So thank you, Maximum PC.
I remember Maximum PC. I assume they're long gone now. Are they still around? No.
Yeah, they still have a magazine. I still get out of my house every month.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Oh, I just assume they've gone out of business.
Because I work there.
Sorry, people that work at Maximum
no,
PC.
No, jeez.
But they're not called Maximum PC anymore. It's called PC Gaming.
A lot of money in the marketing budget. Brand awareness is slightly lacking.
Well, Russell found the Papa Roach page, so...
They look so old now, Flo.
It's so... I was so angry at 13 for some reason. 14.
So yeah. Angry. I sometimes think about my teenage years and just note all the things that in context at the time, absolutely nothing. Absolutely not even anybody would even consider this a problem. But like if I had, are you kids familiar with this band called Wham? exclamation point.
Of course.
There was this band called Wham! Exclamation mark. In the music video, which is something we also had back then, the lead singer had a t-shirt called that had "Choose Life" on it, and it wasn't an anti-abortion thing. It was, I don't know what George Markle was thinking, but it was a white t-shirt with the word choose life. And once again, the same sort of really clever comedic mind in your age 16 said, take something that's really, really popular and then just simply twist the opposite of it. And so in the computer lab, I got the iron-on t-shirt printer cartridge, created like an iron-on transfer, and the next day showed up in a t-shirt that said "Choose Death."
Oh, amazing!
And I think about that, and it's not terribly embarrassing because it's a little bit within the context of being 15, 16 years old. It's funny-ish, but like I would have been tackled before I got onto that. I would have been tased. Oh, I would have been put into some sort of institution.
I went to Christian high school, so I would have loved to have borrowed that from you for the one day a month that we had free dress, which was obviously heavily policed at said Christian school. For some reason, the Catholics got away with way more than we did for the free dress days, which was very, like, made me a little jealous. Yeah, but I would have loved to have worn that.
Yeah.
That's just genius. Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah. So, again, I just try to imagine even people that are younger than all of us, who like you're not old enough that your parents were documenting and posting online everything you were doing before you were able at age 9 to take over those responsibilities for yourself. So it's like, oh, look, we had this old movie on Turner Classic Movies. It was like Schindler's List. And listen to little Sally. She just can't stop yelling, "Go home, Jews." Go on, Sally. Like, oh, Mom, why did you put this on the internet? I was 4 years old. I'm just repeating something that you shouldn't have let me watch on television anyway. But now, like, my boss who is trying to ask me if there's a reason.
Use discretion, people. Use discretion when posting to social media. And also, FYI, this is a thing I think about a lot when I'm doing like my own Snapchats and Instagrams and just thinking, like, when I have a kid, I feel like I have every right to post them on my social media because, like,
literally,
God willing, I made them. God willing, you know, so I can do whatever I want, like, it's mine, or whatever. Well,
especially when you show the Instagram that your husband showed of you in labor and how painful it was.
Oh my God, that's actually happened a couple of times where we've had some friends be like, "Hi, husband, you kind of overstepped the line there, posting me like right after the baby." Because a lot of like people don't even feel comfortable like being seen right after that because hello, like giant trauma to your body. So I worry that, you know, a kid's going to be like 9 years old and come up to me and say, "I feel really violated by the first 4 years of my life because all you did was post me on your social media. And I'm pretty upset about this. And also, I think that you should be paying for my therapy right now. And I better start my fund now, I guess."
GoFundMe/Flo's therapy. I'm really worried now about the opposite, Flo. I've literally never thought about this. But as my kids are growing up, I'm like, one day they're going to stop caring about like gaming and other stuff, all these YouTube stars that they kind of follow at the moment. And they're going to look me up online and they're going to find like all my old stuff. And I'm like, do I want that? Am I meant to be like setting a good image for these kids? Like when they finally figure out what Twitter is and they go on there and they see like all my like old tweets, so they're going to be like, "Dad's an idiot."
I'm worse off than you two though, because I've got a long backlog of, again, I am going to be, oh my God, when my child finds out about me.
Hey, Mom, remember that time
when you were... GoFundMe.com/flowstherapy. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, maybe that'll change the whole like the whole setup of psychotherapy. Now, all I have to do, you do like a sort of like a Mechanical Turk sort of thing. We just simply, here is 18 links from like things that my mom said and posted about me like during my childhood. I'm willing to pay as up to $18 for a diagnosis that is medicatable.
Or if my kid is smart, she'll pitch it as a freelance piece for BuzzFeed, and then it will go viral. So Shout out to my future kid.
Flo's
think
future
about
kid.
How to monetize that.
If you're listening to this podcast and this is going to be like an audio snippet in your like 20, 30 article about like how silly my mum and her friends were, like, I'm just happy that I could be here for this moment.
Exactly. Moment in time. Well, I like that. I mean, I'm going to get very personal for a second and say that I like the fact that, you know, we have sort of all these different experiences with technology, and yet we can all relate on the sort of the personal stuff of it, I guess, or the humanity, I guess, of the technology that we've been living with, I think is what I'm trying to say. Like, just, you know, like Andy talking about going back into old usage patterns by holding his phone and just having like that muscle memory. And I totally feel that. You know, every time I step into like an old video game, for instance, like I just remember all the old little tricks that I used to do, or the fact that like all of us were dumb teenagers. And it's just that my generation, it kind of took it a step a little too far with the whole technology thing. So now we've ruined humanity, and you can't blame that on us. It's fine. I take full responsibility.
What if we were to pass along like the children that we raise, it's like they'll have the best of all worlds, where they will learn from the very outset that they will be documenting their entire lives. They will be chatting, they will take pictures, they will be posting, but they will also understand from the very first thing they post, and a very, very secure encryption. So that it'll all be preserved, it'll all be out there where they can be cloud backed up and accessible, but there will be like a 256 character random number password that they learned before they learned the ABCs, because that is the master key to keeping their jobs secure for the rest of their lives. Because God forbid, I'm feeling such sympathy pains for all these, and listeners, I hope I'm not good. This might be a trigger sort of warning sort of thing. Were you like a very, very depressed teenager? Did you sort of have a crush on somebody and never actually do anything about it, but you replayed it in your mind as you reached out and your heart was broken and you decided, I know what I'll do. I'll write some poetry and post it in a public forum.
I did.
Yeah.
For Brad Goodrich, if you're listening, tweet me. I like to know what you're up to. Did you go study marine biology? Sorry, that got really specific.
All I need to know is that I'm living a better life than you, right, Brad?
Flo's working on a BuzzFeed pitch, and she needs to line up at least – lists have to be at least 6, but no longer than 14.
Exactly. So. Shoot. I'm sorry, I completely forgot, because I wanted to say something to your comment and then I completely forgot, and now I kind of regret saying that joke.
It's Brad's fault. It's all Brad's fault.
It is Brad's fault for... Well,
we all have our periods of bad poetry. And I do have... I was... When I did a very, very deep cleaning of like old boxes, I
you
did
found
find
the notebooks.
That... A little, it wasn't it, actually, I'm, I was, I got off really, really lucky, because I was a teenager and I realized that the one thing I never enjoyed reading is poetry. So I said, am I just thick? Do I just not understand this? So I tried to write poetry, and it's some of the worst writing I have ever, and I have a lot of my other writing from when I was a teenager. And so I'm like, oh my God, that was the best self-defense mechanism, that if I were trying to express your emotions as a teenager are probably going to be embarrassing enough through the filter of really bad poetry. That's like trying to eat a shoe and saying, what if I put like gasoline tainted motor oil on it before it? That's teenage poetry in one image.
That's a very graphic description, but I think you're spot on, Andy. I'm kind of wondering, to bring this back around to Google, whether sometime in the future, this is a weird thought, but could you somehow, like, let's say you could have an AI that can basically like take on most of your intelligence. Could you somehow like just put that in storage for like 30 years, and then when you're older, you can talk to your younger self? You can be like, let's have an argument with younger me who had all these views.
I just want to put my brain, like, I really just want to see the world change. Like, I wish it could be like Futurama, where they could just put your head in a little like incubator or whatever and like keep you around for that. Cause I was just thinking about that too, Russell. Like, I wish there was a way I could just like store myself as data and then have my future great, great, great grandchildren or something just, I don't know, make materialize me. I guess.
Yeah, this is like flow snapshot like 3 in 2017. You're like, let's see how flow changed in these 5 years.
Well, we keep talking about how technology is supposed to like really advance. So we'll see where it goes, I guess.
I would be surprised if photogrammetry could at a certain point could pull that off a little in a practical way, not in a, you know, magical way, but say it wouldn't be automatic. But again, let's say that you've been backing up your photos to Google Photos like forever now. And so basically every picture you take for whatever reason just happens to go securely into the cloud. What if like the next one version of like Auto Awesome, the Google Assistant, could sit in your inbox says, by the way, it turns out that your mom had put enough pictures in Google Photos of your house that I've built a 3D VR model of your house inside and part of the outside as well. Do you want to save this 3D model, 3D VR model? And that would be, I'd see that, that would be, let me say this. I have I'm trying to put this in a non-emotional way that one of the differences between 2017 and 2000 is that in 2017, I can click into this window next to the Skype window right now and look at what my parents' house looks like right now, about 10 years after, you know, it was sold to another family after, you know, they were the original owners. And I don't want to do that. And I wish I could, and on a certain level, I wish I could say, oh, well, I just have no interest in me because that has no connection to me. I think I would have to set aside the whole next of the day to, not that I would be like a puddle of emotional goo, but it's like, it would be so weird to see other cars in the driveway, other children's toys on the deck, different trees, different landscaping, different decorations in the windows. It would be such a weird disconnect that I have the choice of not doing that, and I choose not to do that. And there's the more this information gets put out there, the more interesting it is to have these sort of questions. Like, it's, but now that Google is still like, and other organizations are just scanning more and more newspapers. And so I was doing research on a different, totally different project that I was trying to find this woman who emigrated, not related to me. It was like a tangentially historical figure who I think married an American and emigrated sometime in the late 1800s. And was, no way, didn't, nope, fail. Nope, no, dead end. And of course, I'm like, okay, well, I'm still on the free super, super detailed version of Ancestry you can get at the library, so I'll put my dad's name. And so now I'm looking at his high school yearbook. I'm looking at, oh, he was invited to this Red Cross summit when he was like in high school, but he didn't go. Like, oh, I wonder why he didn't go. And he's gone now, so I can't ask him about it. It's sort of like, do you want your memories of a real person that you knew and loved all your life to, I wouldn't say the word tainted, but to be affected by snippets of information that are incomplete, that you have no context of, where do you want to see him hugging a teenage girlfriend that he never spoke about, you know, do you want to see him hard at work at a hobby that he was intensely passionate about, but when you knew him, you saw absolutely no signs whatsoever that he even held a paintbrush in his entire life. But here's a picture of his gold medal winning painting that he did when he was a freshman in college, and it's gorgeous and it's beautiful. And you're like, but there was nothing, not even, I didn't even see that this isn't a story of my own father, but that's the sort of thing I'm talking about, where it's like, Do you want to be filled with questions that now you can't answer? And do you want to use these bits and bytes to sort of make up in your head a story that may or may not be true? That might be what happens.
This is very, first of all, Andy, I totally get where you're coming from, because like, for instance, a lot of dreams that I have that are really intense, like, take place in the house that I grew up in. And I don't even touch that house with a Google map. Like, it's just, that's not happening. I don't want to know what the neighborhood looks like. I can drive to it in half an hour. I'm not doing that. I'm not doing that. But you know, and then you're talking about like going back through family history, and sort of one of the things that I would really like to set out to do, kind of, I give myself a little like personal projects. And one thing I want to do is I want to go back to the motherland and sort of look inside the pasts of like my grandfather and my parents. But you know, it's going to be a lot harder to do that in Eastern Europe than it is in America, because they, I mean, granted, they have faster internet than we do, but the archiving is different. But it's just, yeah, it's kind of a, I feel like you put it really beautifully. Like, there is still that psychological and emotional effect that technology has on us, even though it's so easy and so at access now.
Yeah, it's a constant temptation. Like, you just reminded me of something that we're like, I don't know very much about like my dad's parents, because the story that dad told me is that that his parents told him that, look, there are really good reasons why we left Eastern Europe, Western Russia, whatever. We wanted to leave that completely behind. We're not interested in talking about it. And he never gave me an indication that they would get angry about it, but he gave me the indication that they were just not interested in talking about, you know, what life was about. He knew his uncles. He knew simple things like that, but the background of that story. And so, again, they probably couldn't. Especially when he was older. I mean, you could hire somebody to do lots of genealogy, but it would not have been easy or trivial. Yeah. Now there's a certain level at which I'd very much like to know what that story was, especially given like the origins. All I know is that it was an interesting place that my grandparents emigrated from, where they could have. It's very possible that they lived there forever. It's possible that they moved there for a time because it was a good way to sort of scrub. If you're worried about getting killed or arrested or something, it was a good place to live for a couple of years so that you now are traveling on papers that you're a citizen of this country as opposed to the place you came from. So it's like, it's on the one hand, these people have been dead for my grandparents have been dead for a mighty long time, but they're not historical figures. But I know that at some point my dad asked them. And so it's like, would I be disrespecting them by not respecting their privacy? And it's like, and again, there is next to the Skype window, there is a magical search window where I could, in the space of 45 minutes, do the work that would have taken 3 years and tens of thousands of dollars. So.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
Technology.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because I feel like we've ended up at an interesting place in this, you know, special episode, in that you kind of realize after a while that you're the product of an entire like unbroken line of, you know, people who had children, who had children, who had children, who moved around the world, who had all sorts of different circumstances happen to them. And I'm going to make the worst kind of simile / analogy in history, but modern smartphones are kind of the same. They're the product of all the phones that came before them. Like some of the feature phones we talked about, some of the things people are playing with, some of the ideas that, you know, brought up, that we wouldn't have the phones we had today if we didn't have the phones that we had before them. And I don't know. I think that's like an interesting parallel. I told you it was going to be bad, but I tried.
No, it's okay. You tried.
Oh, I see what you mean. But it really is all about that lineage of storytelling where, mm-hmm. I mean, parents tell their children the stories of their families. And, of course, they themselves grew up with brothers and sisters, but they don't know what their brothers and sisters' stories were. So they're going to tell you their opinion of what, you know, Uncle Debbie, what Aunt Debbie and what Uncle Steve are like. And you don't know that it was largely based on the fact that Uncle Steve thought that his younger brother was a bit of a pest and therefore was not willing to really talk to him and be the big brother that expected to. And so you're getting a very infected version of what Uncle Steve was and is like. I was about to say unfortunately, and then I was about to edit that out of my brain, but I'll replace that. Unfortunately, I don't have kids. That's not something that it's not a choice I made. I think that kids are something that you don't my basic opinion is that you really have to, it's too big a choice to make that choice. And I just was never in circumstances that wound up with my having kids. And it's not something that I worry about, but there's, again, I also have, you know, older sisters, and it's like, okay, so if I had kids, I would be telling them the stories about what I thought life was like. And they would get to observe me for the first 20 years, something of their life, then intermittently for the next 20 years of their life. And they get a very good picture of who I am. And it bothers me a little bit that in terms of my family's history, the story of Andy and Otko is largely going to be told based on sisters, some of whom may not have an accurate view of my life choices, let's say. And so it's like, okay, but there will be and it's not something that I really struggle with. But when I do think about that, it's like, yeah, but you're also leaving behind unintentionally this breadcrumb trail where if they say, wow, when mom said that Uncle Andy definitely killed the bellhop in San Francisco in 2003, and that's why he... Now, is she guessing at that, or let's do a Google search on Uncle Andy? It's like, oh no, well he traveled a lot, and here's what he wrote about, and he blogged about certain things, what he felt about. So I feel as though anything that it was positive or negative that may be inaccurate spoken about me by my family, they will have a perspective in the breadcrumbs I left behind.
Yeah,
and so on that basis, I'm not quite so embarrassed that I'm leaving behind a trail of crumbs for future generations to follow.
Not only that, but think about 50 years ago, like the only way they would have had audio recordings of you is if you were very, very rich or you were some kind of radio, you know, superstar, you know, on the radio broadcasting for the BBC or something. Like the fact that we have podcasting and they'll be able to refer to this in future generations as well is both
amazing.
This is
going to be archived.
I know. It's on the internet. Archived. Someone's archiving it. I guarantee that.
It's being archived in a giant building right now. Well, when this comes out.
It's. I don't want to finish on this thought, but it is a weird one to think that 100 or 200 years from now, someone could literally pull up this recording and hit play and they'd be like, listen to these old-timey people and what it was like back in 2017. Hopefully people are still around then, by the way.
we were stressed and anxious and trying to figure out what to do with all of these automated digital technological things that humanity hadn't really prepared for before.
Mm. Yeah, but that too is quite beautiful. It's like, how old were you when you realized that the smile was not invented in 1938? The reason why like every photo of somebody from the 1800s is them like looking very, very grim and very, very stiff and very, very serious. Like, oh, that's because the camera had an exposure of about 45 seconds and they were being told, don't move, don't blink, don't change your expression. And their head was like resting on some sort of a metal arm. It's like, oh, okay. And it was a long time before shutter speeds. The cameras were small enough that photography was accessible enough and shutter speeds were low enough that you can actually just take a snapshot of somebody smiling or just like looking the way they normally do. And like you said about, unless I was a broadcaster 50 years ago, they wouldn't want my voice sound like if that were true, they would think that I always talk like this. Like, hi. I'm your blind date Andy. Tonight we're gonna be having four different kind of entrees, and then afterwards I thought we'd see a movie. They wouldn't, as opposed to hearing me just sort of naturally speak, or hearing me just, you know, in the background of some wedding video or something. So
I'm in the background going, "Woo! Congratulations!" Just yelling. I'm always the loudest yeller, which obviously we have figured out from this podcast.
Note to self: do not invite Flo to weddings.
Hey, I am very enthusiastic and I am happy for you. So you want me there because when no one else is wooing, I am. I'm the wooer.
No worries about me, Russell. I'm a very sleepy drunk. You get four Chardonnays inside me and then I'm making a little tent underneath one of the unused tables and having a nap.
Oh, I've had many stories of your wedding photography as well, Andy. I'd invite you and your 21 phones to my wedding. I've already had one though, so it's too late.
You could do what Mariah did and have one for every year of your wedding, and then and don't do what Mariah did because she didn't end up with him anyway.
That story went south really quick.
Don't do that.
You could do. Oh no, never mind.
Don't do it.
Well, I think we've given value for money here. We got a cool little idea for a topic turned into a very lovely conversation that has got me glancing down to make sure that this was actually being recorded, because I think I might actually like to listen to this myself at some point.
Yeah, this
maybe,
was good.
Maybe in 30 years' time.
Yeah, yeah. Or 200, when I'm just a head in a jar. Come visit me at the Metropolitan Museum of Art, where I will be on display as part of my great-great-great-grandchild's project, probably.
2017 person.
Will they have a headphone jack, though?
Yes. Will they be able to plug in and listen to you, Flo? Will they just be like, why is she talking? No words are coming out. Oh, I need those fancy new headphones. Damn it.
Can't believe I came 800 miles to hear the wisdom of my great-great-great-grandmother that can only be woken for 45 seconds every 8 years, and I forgot my damn dongle. Isn't that always the way?
I forgot to charge the Bluetooth. Yeah.
My great-great-great-great-great-great-grandma's batteries don't work anymore. Stupid batteries. I tried.
Yeah, like the batteries on these phones that we tried to revive. It didn't work on mine. It was very frustrating.
Well, on that note, this is Andy Anetko thanking you listeners for supporting the show. I'm sure the Flo, would you like to thank our listeners for supporting the show?
Thank you, listeners. Thank you so much for listening to the show. And if you like this, tell us. Because... Maybe we'll riff again some other time for you.
There you go. Maybe we'll continue into a second hour until we're all crying.
We get along.
Relay.fm/material. No, this is great.
And if you did manage to get all the way to the end and you have some feelings right now, feel free to let us know, because I definitely do.
Please, always tweet me your feelings. I'm always here for your feelings. And that is a very serious note.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. Don't know when the next time we'll be doing this, but you'll have to be a member to find out. So that's another incentive. Thank you so much for your contributions monetarily, for all your comments, and the good feelings that so many of you send out to us via Twitter and elsewhere. Obviously, I think you get the idea from our interrelationship here on the show that we enjoy doing the show a lot. But it's also very, very pleasant to know that so many of you are enjoying it as well. And on that note, everybody have a great day, whatever kind of day you're having right now. Bye-bye.